Welcome to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene. Daily, we bring you insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. Find Bloomberg Surveillance on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Bloomberg.
Let's get over to Kit Jukes right now from SocGen, Chief FX Strategist. And Kit, let me put a question to you that Marie and I have been discussing today. I talked with Daniel Lacaille about, as I mentioned. How confident are you that the EU is going to be able to efficiently and quickly hand out the stimulus money from its rescue package as needed?
I'm confident that they'll get it done. I'm absolutely confident that there'll be glitches along the way because that's how Europe works. But I'm still confident that we've passed a turn in the road, if you like, where fiscal policy, after being really hardly active for the last decade, is finally coming to the party in a meaningful fashion. And I think that for me, that's the important thing. You know, we're not going to do it as quickly as someone wanted. It won't be, you know, there'll be glitches along the way, but it's happening. And for the last 10 years, the ECB has been the only game in town, and this money is going to get spent, and that is really important.
So, Kit, I guess when do we, I don't know, I keep thinking of the financial crisis and that long protracted recovery, right, which actually was ultimately really good for many different asset classes. But how do you see, is it once again, we heard Fed Chief Jay Powell kind of talk about the possibility for kind of a long sustainable recovery coming out of this era as well. How do you see it? Do you feel like you've got that visibility yet?
Well, I think, I mean, my instinct is, And I'll stress instinct that everything about the recovery from the financial crisis, and although they got panned for some of the, for some bits of it, I thought that, you know, this time is different, and was a brilliant look, you know, at the time in terms of how a financial crisis was going to leave us with really serious scarring, with a financial system that didn't help the recovery properly in some places, and it was particularly true in Europe. I think the recovery from this, it seems to me, is that this has been a horrible year, but it's still only a 10 month crisis, and in all likelihood, I think once we get enough people vaccinated, we will get what people will say afterwards is a very V-shaped economic recovery. I don't think there's a lot of long term scarring that gets left behind as a result of this pandemic, so. You can put some things in place that are better. You can do well, but I think this is going to be a quicker return to where we were before the crisis this time than after 2009 for sure.
Well, then, Kit, is Larry Summers, former U.S. Treasury Secretary, who got a lot of heat on social media over the weekend, saying that maybe we don't need these $2,000 stimulus checks, and he was really thinking about it's got to be really targeted relief going to the people who ultimately really need it. His concern is we're pumping a lot of stimulus into the economy at this point. Some argue, listen, let's overdo it. Let's make sure everybody's getting what they need. His point is there are people who don't need it who are getting it, and that could lead to an overheated economy. Do you worry at all about that?
I don't worry in the first instance. I think in the first instance it's true. You've got a lot of people who need help now in terms of replacing salaries who don't have any money, and we don't have time, I think, at a logistical level to go and find out exactly who those people are and do it right. So that's the decision that's been taken in a bunch of countries. It is true. I mean, it's true on the other side that an enormous amount of the money that's been handed out in this crisis has gone to people who just can't spend it because we're all locked down in places where we can't do things. You know, I cannot go on a holiday to celebrate having a handout of some kind. So there's a lot of pent-up demand that when we get these vaccines in is going to kick in automatically. And you know, so in 3 months' time, you'll find that of the money handed out this time in the U.S., quite a lot of that's going to have been saved because people can't do that much else with it. Now, again, that does mean that when we come out of the other side of this, so when we have vaccines to a significant number of the population, and we can all go to restaurants, bars, and holidays, we're going to go really for it. And that's why I think we get such a V-shaped recovery coming out. Now, you know, how will we feel at the end of that about Jay Powell's commitment to keep rates so low for such a long time? How will we feel about tax adjustments that need to be made to kind of balance things down the road? Yeah, we you know, those, if you like, those are good problems for policymakers to have down the road. But they're still going to be helped by the fact that we've got a lot of disinflationary pressures here holding at least inflation under control.
I mean, when you talk about overheating economy, I have this mental image of Mario Draghi chuckling, you know, or I think of Ben Bernanke on 60 Minutes back in the day when he said inflation's a problem we can deal with. Don't worry about that. It's disinflation that's the issue. What do you think? You know, investors, on the other hand, Kit, do seem to be gearing up for the possibility of inflation. I mean, gold isn't running away. It's at 1900. But Bitcoin at 28,000 is partly kind of the Reddit cult following and the inflow from these big famous money managers. But a lot of it is because people think printing presses are going to start running out of control, and this is a good hedge against inflation on fiat currencies. What do you think?
Part of it is, look, I don't know if it's a hedge against inflation as much as a hedge against asset prices being generally out of control as a result of such easy policy. That, you know, if we come out of this crisis, if you like, with asset prices, and you're talking about PE levels, but PE levels too high and bond yields too low, then the one thing you can bet in the next cycle is it's really hard for the Fed to have a rate cycle that doesn't have a lower peak level of rates than the current one, and that we'll continue that pattern, and that in the same process of that, companies then are still being encouraged to borrow too much money and raise themselves and fund themselves with debt rather than with equity. The Fed's frightened of the equity market going down, so it's letting it go up. And so that's where you get this loss of confidence in fiat money, if you like, and people looking for other assets. And gold is one of those, and Bitcoin has been a trendy one of those, for want of a description, wherever it goes in the long run. I think that those, and I do think that there is a question that we need to, you know, ask ourselves, or at least the policy makers need to ask ourselves and say, if what if the problem is not consumer price inflation until we get through all the things that have held inflation down for the last 20, 30 years?
Right.
What if the problem is we're just taking the debt cycle further by having real interest rates that are too low? And how do you get out of that if we're so sensitive whenever they go up even a tiny bit?
Well, these are things certainly we're all going to be talking about for some time. Kit, always good to check in with you. Kit Jukes from SocGen joining us on the phone on this Monday. Kathy Jones, she is Charles Schwab, Chief Fixed Income Strategist. Got to take a look at the fixed income market because, of course, we're watching as more stimulus is pumped into the economy. What is the ultimate impact when it comes to fixed income? Kathy, great to have you here with Matt and myself. How do you see it, the stimulus package, and what it does ultimately for the economy overall, what it does for Americans, and what it does for the fixed income trade?
Well, it helps fill a gap that continues to be open. You know, when we hit this crisis, a huge gap, the output gap opened up. We've come about two-thirds of the way back, still got a third of the way to go, and that affects, by and large, the lowest income folks, so the people who have the least cushion, and now they've just seen some of that cushion kind of taken away temporarily. But it also affects small business, it affects state and local governments, so we still have a ways to go. And I think that the fiscal aid is a good thing. It certainly is buoying markets. It raises optimism about the economy further out in 2021. And we're optimistic in terms of the second half of the year as well. And I think ultimately it pushes up bond yields. We've been hovering right below 1% here in 10-year Treasury yields. If we continue to see inflation expectations move up and signs of increased recovery, by the end of 2021, we could be close to the 1.5% area.
So we were talking earlier about the fact that bond yields are incredibly low, Kathy, you know, near zero there, but negative everywhere else. And price earnings ratios are incredibly high. Certainly in the U.S., I just looked at the S&P and we're at almost 30 times estimated earnings. How can investors expect to make any money even if we get further stimulus?
Yeah, it's going to be a challenging year. And I think Schwab, along with a lot of other places, are indicating that expected returns are going to be lower. You know, the higher the price you pay, the lower the expected return over time. So I think you do have to have realistic expectations about where we're going. But it's not an environment where we just say, you know, move to cash, because cash is going to pay nothing for at least a year or two, possibly longer. So the key is to be fairly selective in the fixed income market. At what we're saying is keep the duration short so you're not exposed to a lot of increase in long-term rates, and move up in credit quality, whether it's investment-grade corporate bonds, municipal bonds, et cetera. There's still some yield to be had and the opportunity to compound those yields.
All right, so I'm looking at the piano behind. I know you've already played for Surveillance, so I'm not going to ask you to play for Matt and me, but I do wonder if you were composing something and you had to describe, you know, something for 2021, is it going to be more optimistic, but you got to be patient to get to that optimism, or is it going to be a bit somber this year?
You know, I think it's going to start out on a more somber note. Markets aside, I think economically speaking, it's going to start out on a more somber note, but it's probably going to be more like a Beethoven symphony where you have highs and lows, you know, crescendos and declines, because we're all looking right now at this optimistic scenario for the second half of the year, and we all know that things don't just glide in the direction that we want them to. So I'm expecting a fairly tumultuous year coming.
All right. We've certainly seen a lot of volatility, so just get ready, everybody, for a little bit more. Kathy, thank you so much. Happy New Year. Kathy Jones of Charles Schwab joining us here on Surveillance.
Lindsay Piegza, a Stifel chief economist, joins us now to talk a little bit more about this. Lindsay, Larry wrote a, Secretary Summers, I suppose, wrote an op-ed for Bloomberg explaining a little bit more. He said, of course, he thinks stimulus is necessary, more stimulus, but he used the old anti-minimum wage argument when it comes to stimulus checks, saying, hey, if we're going to say 2,000 is better than 600, why not do 5,000 or 10,000? What do you think?
Well, I think right now this represents a lot of frustration that we're seeing surrounding the stimulus bill. For many, the frustration stems from the fact that it's taken months to negotiate to get to this point, and it's seen as smaller in scope than many would like. There's others that argue they're pet projects or pet components in the legislation that really doesn't address the issues of the pandemic itself. There's others that say it really doesn't matter how much we send out in terms of direct stimulus or relief to Americans. It's really about finding a long-term health solution. Remember, this wasn't a market crisis, this was a health crisis. So in order to have a long-term sustainable pathway to recovery, we have to have a meaningful way to separate the healthy from the sick. So there really isn't much that the government can do long-term other than support finding a way to get that vaccine out to the American public and have widespread inoculation.
So, okay, so let me push a little bit further here, Lindsay, because, you know, Matt was mentioning Larry Summers did, you can check it out on the Bloomberg Terminal, you know, did do an op-ed piece, you know, referring to that $2,000 stimulus check and the comments he made. And he said total employee compensation is now running only about $30 billion per month behind the pre-COVID baseline. He talks about the congressional stimulus from this bill will add about $150 billion a month to household income in order to replace all of this loss. So is he right? Is he right in that we're putting too much into the economy when you're saying it's a health problem, that unless we really do money that's targeted towards getting that, you know, dealt with and stopped, is he kind of right in what he's saying?
Well, there certainly is validity to his argument. When we look at replacing one's wages at 100%, or in some cases with these enhanced benefits above 100%, you actually create a disincentive for many of these workers to return to the marketplace. And we've heard a number of stories, particularly in the service sector, in the restaurant industry, actually, to be more specific, that they're having difficulty reconnecting with workers as they try to reopen in some capacity at 50% or doing delivery only. And they're having trouble finding workers to come back and actually fill those positions. And this isn't a political statement or a judgment in any means, but if you're paid X to work or X plus 20% to not work, most rational agents would choose the latter. So it certainly is creating some disconnect in the labor market.
And at the same time, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. There are millions of Americans, Matt and I have been talking about it, that are facing eviction, are facing that they can't put food on their table. So it's, I don't know how we kind of make sure that we're doing the right thing. And I'm wondering how you kind of factor all of that into it.
Absolutely. We're talking about 10 million renting-based families that could be impacted by that eviction if it is not extended beyond what that fifth round stimulus package has at the end of January. So it's a very delicate balance. On the one hand, we want to make sure that we encourage people to participate in the labor market. On the other hand, we want to make sure that we support businesses and workers that have lost income, revenue, opportunities through no fault of their own, but by the government's own design. So it's a very delicate balance. But again, it doesn't come down to long-term sustainability via government funding or government support. It has to come from health solutions. And so right now, that's where the majority of our focus, that's where the majority of the funding should be driven, at least in my opinion.
Lindsay, what do you expect from a Biden administration? It's not going to be too many weeks now until President Biden gets into office. There's the possibility, depending on what happens in Georgia, that he even has control of the Congress and the Senate as well. So what are you expecting from the Democrats in 2021?
Well, we're going to assume a balance of power in Congress. We will assume that Republicans maintain control of the Senate. Of course, the House is led by the Democrats. And right there, that's going to remove a number of fringe agendas, from violent tax increases to Medicare for all, to the Green New Deal, aggressive changes in immigration or regulatory reform. Those are all off the table, at least for now. But of course, the president will still have the power to tip the needle in one direction. And we do expect him to focus on a sixth round relief package to come immediately. We also expect him to lessen some pressure on China, loosen the U.S. Stance on immigration, at least to a certain degree. So there are some moderate changes that we would expect on some of these big ticket issues that he would otherwise prefer to have sweeping reform, which, again, will be controlled by the fact that we have that balance of power, that presumed balance of power in Congress.
So gridlock is good, at least for markets. What do you think happens in terms of risk assets? I mean, we're living in an economy where you lend your money to the government for no return, and you invest in equities at a 30 price earnings ratio.
Well, the equity market seems to be elated by the fact that we did finally reach a deal, a fifth round stimulus package. The equity market also seems to be getting a positive boost from Brexit negotiations, which appear also to have taken a positive step in the right direction. So right now, the equity market seems to be focused on everything but the fact that fundamentals in the economy appear to be losing momentum, and the fact that the U.S. economy—
Yeah, it's all animal spirits, right?
Absolutely. Right now, depending on the depth and duration of this second round resurgence and the subsequent policy measures that we put in place, we could see the first quarter dip back into negative territory. Yet you see very little, if any, concern priced in via the equity market.
Right. Gridlock, good and euphoria, good for the markets, but not necessarily for humans. There was a great story on the Bloomberg just about that. Just quickly, Lindsay, I do think about the first Fed meeting of 2021, January 27th. We'll have a new administration in the White House. What do you think will be kind of the thing that Jay Powell has to do at that first meeting of the new year?
I think he's going to continue to walk this very delicate line of highlighting the improvement that we've seen in the economy, but continue to put pressure on the federal government, as we've seen him do many times, that really the Federal Reserve has passed that proverbial baton to the federal government to step up with any further relief or stimulus measures that are needed. So I do expect Powell to continue to, again, walk that delicate line, but keep the pressure on the new administration
right
to continue to provide support.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting new year, no doubt about it. Lindsay, thank you so much. Lindsay Piegza of Stifel joining us there. I do want to talk a little bit about, speaking of distress, we've certainly seen that play out when it comes to the retail sector. So someone who knows retail so well is Steve Sadov. He is former Saks CEO, MasterCard senior advisor. He joins us on this Monday. Steve, so great to have you here with us. This holiday season actually turning out to be okay.
Absolutely. I think it's been a healthy consumer environment. If you look at the MasterCard Spending Pulse numbers, which measures all of retail, not just the MasterCard numbers. It shows that from October 11th to December 24th, which is what we're looking at as the full season, the consumer grew 3% versus year ago. And if you had asked me back in March whether or not there was a shot that you were going to see positive growth like that, I would have said, you're kidding. Those numbers are almost essentially in line with what we saw in 2019 in terms of growth. So it's a healthy consumer. It's very different than we saw before. Well, much more digital.
Well, let's talk about that because it's interesting. You, Matt, and I were talking in the break, and we were talking about everybody's kind of all in on your home right now.
Yep. Absolutely. Home, you're nesting, you're not at work, you're fixing up your house. So anything related to home, furnishings, electronics, stay-at-home types of activities, grocery doing extremely well, apparel not doing well, department stores. Within an apparel, which declined 19% during the holiday season, you see still strength in athleisure, in some of the casual dressing. Nobody's buying, nobody's going out to events. So they're not buying dresses and items like that. That'll come back in time, but you're having this gravitating towards the home, but you also have this digital environment. People aren't comfortable being in the stores. The malls are having a very difficult time, apparel stores. What you're seeing is the big box retailers, which have been winning throughout this environment, the Home Depot, Lowe's, Targets, Walmarts, et cetera, doing extremely well. And that continued during the holiday season. But there's one other thing I think is fascinating. You see strength in the suburbs versus the cities. Hmm. People aren't going into the offices. That the savings rate you talked about earlier going up, it's also people aren't spending on commuting. They're not eating in restaurants. That's leading you towards the dollars going towards items like the home and home improvement.
So, you know, Steve, how does this, you know, in terms of kind of some of the patterns we're seeing right now and the increase in online, how much of that stays with us post-pandemic in your view? Because we've constantly been talking about online kind of overtaking brick and mortar. We still have a long way to go when it comes to that. But I do think that there are people who never ordered, whether it was food or some other things online, all of a sudden did it for the first time. And they're like, this is pretty easy. So what changes dramatically, potentially, when it comes to retail post-pandemic?
You know, I think we've probably seen 8 years of change in 8 months. You Wow. now have digital being about 20% of the total purchases. That means that 80% is still being done in a physical store. So we shouldn't be writing off stores because stores are still critically important. I think that a lot of the changes that we're seeing are here to stay. It's that the digitization of society, you're going to have working differently. People are going to have a mix of in their offices and at home. That means they're going to have to have fixing up their home on a continued basis. Restaurants are going to come back. Apparel will come back. But I think that more importantly, some of the societal changes that we've seen, the consumer, and it used to be more the Gen Z customer, now it's everybody concerned about brands and brand values, social justice issues, environmentally conscious, what the brands stand for, how the products are made. Those kinds of changes, I think, are going to stick with us. I also think that the trend towards moving out of the cities, right now, suburban sales are much stronger than you're seeing in some of the urban areas. I think cities aren't going to die, that's for sure. You have enormous amount of the cultural aspects of the cities right. that are going to be vibrant. But I do think that some of these changes are going to be sticking with us.
So what kind of retailer do you not want to be, Steve, right now, when you look at what's going to come maybe in the next 2 to 4 years, let's say?
Well, the ones you didn't want to be were the distressed, financially distressed apparel retailers like the Neiman Marcus's, the JCPenney's, the Brooks Brothers, the J. Crew's that already have gone bankrupt during the pandemic. I think that the inline apparel retailers in malls are still stressed because the malls aren't the place that consumers are shopping. They're shopping in outdoor strip malls, but indoor shopping malls are slower to recover. So I think that's going to be a difficult environment for some time to come. I think that broadly, restaurants are still having a very difficult time. I was pleased to see that the pandemic support bill got signed last night, but restaurants are in terrible condition. Now you're gonna see a resurgence in restaurants when once we're into the post-pandemic period, right. But you're also gonna see a reset of rents You're going to see real estate being very different. You look at vacancy rates of, let's say, in New York, of Manhattan, Soho and Madison Avenue, 30-40% vacancy rates.
Right, right.
Retail real estate prices will go down, and you're going to see a reset in all these categories.
We're already seeing that reset. Just drive down the avenues here in New York City, and you see a lot of those retail stores that have been shut down already. Steve, thank you so much. Have a great new year. Steve Sadev, he's former Saks CEO and MasterCard senior advisor, joining us on this Monday.
Thanks for listening to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. Subscribe and listen to interviews on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. I'm on Twitter at Tom Keene. Before the podcast, you can always catch us worldwide on Bloomberg Radio.